Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a data and cognitive scientist, full-stack web developer, and an entrepreneur who started his first company at 11 years old. My guest doesn't just have a penchant for starting companies, but as you're going to hear, he also knows how to achieve successful exits with multiple exits under his belt. But he is currently the co-founder of Strong Analytics, a data science consulting firm that helps companies understand their customers and leverage machine learning to make their products and operations better. They've also just launched their first in-house product called Optimail to help companies optimize drip email marketing campaigns using AI. Now, let's hack Brock Ferguson. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, ActiveCampaign. ActiveCampaign enables you to send perfectly timed messages in response to your customers' actions and behaviors. It's been proven. Companies using marketing automation see 53% higher conversions than those using traditional, what I call boring, email marketing methods. Treat your contacts as unique individuals rather than sending everyone the same boring message. With marketing automation, your campaigns can listen, learn, adapt, and respond, all based on your contacts' behaviors and as their customer profile changes. It's beautiful, it's easy to use, and you don't need to hire consultants because you can set it up for yourself. See why thousands are upgrading to a more intelligent marketing solution. Sign up for a free 14-day trial right now. No credit card needed. Go to activecampaign.com/hack. There's no training fees. There's absolutely no contracts. And pricing is accessible to any business. Plus, there's an absolutely special offer for Hack the Entrepreneur listeners. You can get a free migration service right now. Move all your contacts, lists, templates, anything you want from your old provider. You're going to get your second month of service absolutely for free, no matter what pricing level you decide to take. Plus, there's a free one-on-one strategy session with a platform consultant. You can use this during your free trial to give yourself a jump start. Start marketing smarter today. Get and convert more leads with ActiveCampaign. Go to activecampaign.com/hack right now. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest all the way from Vancouver. Brock, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. So let's jump into it. Brock, you are a man of many, many hats. But today we're talking to Brock, the entrepreneur. So could you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Oh, that's a great question. Wow. Yeah. I mean, the one thing that kind of I always come back to, I guess, is really just like trying to outwork anyone, right? Like, it's crazy. I've like gone and tried to think, you know what? I got really good at this kind of development, or hey, I went and trained up in this kind of statistics or machine learning, something like that. But what it comes down to, and what I think is actually sort of the common theme underlying the stuff I've done, is just trying to outwork everyone else who's trying to do the same thing.
Wow. Yeah. That's like, if you don't know more than them, or if you don't have more experience, just outwork them. And is that like, yeah, like, so is outworking like longer hours, or is this like, do you have some sort of focus to like just get more done in shorter periods of time?
Yeah, I mean, I try to be really efficient with the way I work, actually. And so that actually means not being like a perfectionist about any one thing, I find, but just trying to like, yeah, get to that point where it's okay, that's in good shape, now move on. Don't sort of dwell on one thing. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. I mean, it's like, it's weird. It's sort of a balance, right, between obsessively focusing on something, but then quickly knowing, okay, that's okay, now I got to move on to the next thing. And explaining your instincts around that is really difficult.
Yeah, totally. And that's fair enough. So you've had sort of like an interesting journey, right? You went to school, then you got into business, and then you went back to school.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of go through this process for us and how it sort of worked out for you?
For sure. So yeah, I mean, I actually was one of those kids who sort of started my first business when I was really, really young. I started as a web designer, I called myself, when I was 11. And by 13, I was like actually doing real projects for real companies and organizations. And they were small for sure. And they took a lot of time and I didn't make much money, but I really enjoyed it. And it was like a fun encouragement to really keep learning about how to build websites and also how to sell yourself and building websites. By the time, I guess I was around 14 or 15, I saw that, you know, I actually didn't want to really just be selling my time as a web designer. And so I actually started complementing my services with like web hosting services, which back then people were willing to pay quite a bit of money just to host 100 megabyte website.
At 13?
At somewhere between 13 and 15, I sort of started the transition. Yeah. So like back then it was as simple as I rented a couple dedicated servers down at a place in Texas and then just like partitioned it up and sold web hosting services. And I mean, we had a couple hundred clients, I think.
Wow.
Paying for web hosting. And I ended up selling that company to a slightly larger company when I was, I believe, 17 years old. And I sold that one because I said, you know, I'm getting ready to go to university and I didn't want to take that too lightly. And so I actually tried to, that was the first time I tried to leave the entrepreneurship world and focus on school. And yeah, I started my schooling when I was 18. And basically that lasted for maybe 3 or 4 months before I really had that urge to build something again. And I started building my second company, which was a software company.
While in school.
Yeah.
And then you finish school and you keep building the company until you sell that one.
Yeah. So that was starting in my first year of university. I started the software company we built. I say we, but really it was me. I built a content management system that was particularly aimed at subscription websites that wanted to charge like a monthly fee for access. And that was a niche I stumbled upon because one of my clients said, hey, there's really nothing good out there to use. Could you build something for me? And I took a few extra minutes, looked around and realized I could probably build something for this person and for all the other people who want to do the same thing. So yeah, I built that and ended up spinning out a couple of other pieces of software from that first project that allowed people using existing content management systems to charge a subscription sort of fees for membership access to the websites. And that ended up being, yeah, a pretty successful business just selling software. And then, so this is history repeating itself. I ended up selling that one so I could then focus on my PhD. That lasted a little bit longer. The PhD was a lot of work and actually really, really fun. I had a great time, but I could only go so long without starting another company.
And now you have several going at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was actually as I graduated with my PhD at around the same time that this latest company, this is a software as a service company, was doing really well. And it ended up being acquired about a year later. And at that point after graduating, I decided, you know, I'd keep coming back to this. This is clearly what I love to do. I love to build. And so, yeah, I've really just gone all in on the entrepreneurship thing and I'm trying it again with some new companies.
So this, you have like a lethal combination of like development, sales, and apparently like finding markets that need something built for them. Which is a crazy combination. Usually that's like three different people in a company.
Yeah, it's such an interesting, I guess, sort of just a product of my past, right? Like I'm a full stack developer because I had to be, because that's what I wanted to build at the beginning. And then the PhD is actually the thing I'm actually really excited about because that introduced me to this whole world of statistics and machine learning at a time when those kinds of technologies are just like picking up steam and really getting recognized as a way that I think is going to transform the way people do business and build products. And there's actually really great links between the kinds of like machine learning and AI tools out there and web apps. Like these tech companies, myself included, are some of the first companies to actually build and leverage the power of those things. And so there, that's like really a great integration, I think, of my experience of just the PhD, that statistics, machine learning, with the full stack development. And yeah, I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, you were in a great spot selling your company and then getting to go do a PhD, like, and love every minute of it. Like, it wasn't just something you had to do because you wanted to become a professor or do, you know what I mean? That next step, like, you're just, I want to do this.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And now you don't even, like, you don't have to, like, sort of utilize that necessarily to build businesses from now on. But it's fascinating to the number of businesses you've had acquired. Like from when you were 15 years old, like, do you build businesses somehow, you think, to make them like acquirable? Some people build businesses and they can never get rid of them. Even software companies. What do you think that you do that makes it like that? Or do you just sell really hard and sell people on them?
No, that's a great question, because I definitely do. I build businesses that can be acquired, and I do that very consciously. So I think there's two things I'd like to say about that. One is I do it because I'm actually really conservative, which is weird. It's like, I think it's probably atypical for an entrepreneur to be like hyper conservative, but like I am, and I always plan for the worst, and I always think I need this to have an exit plan for sure in place. And then the second thing is just like, yeah, I do focus on that really hard, and I plan for these acquisitions like years in advance. Really from day one, I look at the company through the eyes of a potential acquirer, and I think about how that looks. And I also think about it too, acquisition is one exit, and that's one way to, this one benefit of planning in the way I do. But the other thing I think of is like contingencies for if something were to happen to me, how does this company move on? Like how can it transition to someone else that needs to be able to understand how it works? And it's very different than being acquired, but it actually means a lot of the same things as far as the way you're running the company. And that is specifically like, I'm really particular about data and transparency in the companies. So one of the things that comes up during acquisition is like the best potential acquirers are going to want to know absolutely everything about your company. And they're going to want to know it not today, but historically as well. And so I make sure that we track the statistics and we track our numbers and we track everything from revenue, but non-revenue stuff as well, like engagement and usage, really, really in a detailed way and in a way that other people can understand too. And then the other things, just like making sure that development processes and all this kind of stuff, which takes up your time right during the day. So I remember, for example, for my second company, the company I sold before, or as I was starting graduate school, there was just like a lot of little tasks I realized that I had to do every single day. So when people purchased licenses, I had to go like in and do something to activate it or whatever. And the process for getting that company to a place where it could be acquired was just like really gradually automating every single possible thing I could do so that I could honestly look someone in the eye and say, this company isn't going to take too much of your time. This really is just like a monthly revenue generating asset.
Wow. So it's not necessarily like writing out SOPs for every sort of administrative task. It's actually using automation to just eliminate them.
Exactly. It's automation. And then there's a second level of automation where you're trying to detect like failures in those processes too, right? Because I've been on the end too, where you automate something to the point where you kind of forget how it works and then something breaks and you have no idea where to fix it. So it really is like, yeah, it's careful automation and redundancy checks and things like that. But that's one of the things I found to be most important in the way I approach like getting a company sold.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. I love it. And like it's thinking about it from day one. So when you start something like Strong Analytics, how much of like those sort of processes from a previous company do you start with? Or are you starting from scratch every time?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I would say like I do the same sorts of things. I mean, but I don't have any like tools or anything per se that I can bring over usually, but I bring the same principles. And that just means like watching the way I'm running the company and asking myself, is this a thing I could automate? Is this a thing I could clearly explain and write down and share with someone else? And is this a thing that I could measure in a way that someone in the future will want to see and know? And so I would say like, yeah, with the companies I'm building now. And so we have Strong Analytics, which is really like a data science development and consulting firm, like largely, but we're also developing our own products, of which Optimail is the first one. I would say we're just starting to that. We're like, I'm not thinking of an acquisition at the moment, but starting to begin to plan for one in terms of getting the automation and stuff there for sure.
I like it. So yeah, and I mean, you might find better ways probably to do things as you kind of progress through businesses. Do your sales processes always get sort of automated in this way too with companies? Is that something like, I know with Optimail, yeah, obviously you just buy it on the web.
Right.
Pick your price point, but I don't think it's always been like that, right, with your companies?
No, for sure. And I actually have gone back and forth on how like no touch of a sales process I want. And I realized with Marvin was my partner with this company called MySite Auditor. We had a very, very hands-off sales process for a long time. And there's always that path. If you don't want to talk to someone, we're not going to force you to talk to someone before you purchase the product. But at the same time, we don't want to remove that channel. And so we kind of build a really interesting system where we get a lot of leads to that tool, people who use it on the free trial. And we have so many that it's really not feasible for us to reach out to each one of them and say, hey, how's it going? Like, anything I can help you with? It's just not going to scale. But we did want to reach out to some because we know that there are some things that people can learn through a conversation with us that they might not get with a tool. And so there, actually, we end up building a system using a simple predictive model that actually learned what kinds of patterns people on the free trial exhibit that are likely to indicate that they're people who might purchase the product. And so that let us then rank everyone on a trial as being, hey, this person is actually a good candidate and might buy the product versus these people are definitely not going to buy the product and they're just going to try it once and leave. And so that way, when we actually reach out to have a conversation, a pre-sales conversation, we're targeting the people a little bit more intelligently than just trying to get in touch with everyone who's ever touched the product once.
But at that point, when they reach that score, you would reach out to them.
Yeah, exactly. We would reach out. And so
that's impressive.
This started out as an experiment because we had this hunch through feedback that there's some people aren't as comfortable to actually purchase it without having this conversation. And it can we can help explain why you'd use the tool and how best to use the tool through a quick conversation. But like I said, we couldn't have this conversation like thousands of times a day. So this let us do it in a little bit more of an intelligent way. And we did an experiment where we spoke to some people and didn't speak to others. And we saw higher conversions in the people we did speak to. And that was proof enough to scale it up and try to do this as much as possible.
It's impressive. That's what I think we see now as lead scoring.
Yeah.
Within things like ActiveCampaign and Infusionsoft. So that's not what Optimail does now. Because it, right?
Right.
Because as you were saying, right, I was like, did he now build that into another separate business?
No. Yeah, there's exactly. That kind of exists. I mean, people do call that lead scoring for sure. Yeah. And this was just like a custom model because we wanted it to actually respond to the way people used our app and not other more general factors that might indicate you're a good lead or something. Now, Optimail is actually, it's a tool for optimizing email drip campaigns. So it can actually be used in sort of to the same end. And that is, for example, these SaaS apps, you often have like an onboarding campaign where you're going to send maybe 5 to 10 emails over the first month that someone's using your tool. And this might be have a goal of encouraging them to move from a free trial to a paid subscription, or you might just want them to get to explore all the different features, or you might just want them to like not leave you or to share it with a friend or something like that. And so I think people have done this like really well. Now everyone's setting up these campaigns. And when you sign up for a new tool, it's almost a guarantee you're going to get some set sequence of emails over the next little while. The hard thing is that you never know. It's really hard to know whether those emails are actually working and whether a different configuration of those emails or timing or whatever could actually be more effective in driving people towards whatever your goal is. And so Optimail was my response to not wanting to spend days and days trying to tailor email campaigns and tweak them to make them more effective. It's actually an implementation of a deep reinforcement learning algorithm that actually tries to learn what sequence of emails is most effective for what segments of customers you have. And so the promise of Optimail is it's kind of learning there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, constantly tweaking your campaign to make it more effective so that you can be off doing something else. And to an entrepreneur that tends to work in really small teams, that's awesome for me to not have to spend my time tweaking email campaigns.
Yeah. So it was probably obviously inevitable that you would do something like this with like artificial intelligence and stuff, right? Yep. Like, and the data, because I mean, you have a PhD now in it. So is like coming up with the idea that you don't want to do this and you didn't want to have to pay attention to this, you wanted to build a system to do it. What sort of like process did you go through to decide that it was worth sort of spinning off as its own, like your first product through Strong Analytics?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I wish I had a better answer for you, but we actually sort of resisted doing too much market research in this case, because for a few reasons. I mean, the first of which, this is actually our first product that we were building as a team. And this was just something I think we needed to do as almost a learning experience as much as anything. I think we'd been doing a lot of consulting for different companies, and we'd wanted to build a product for a little bit of time. And my co-founders don't have the same sort of entrepreneurial experience as me. This is their first company. And so I thought, you know, this isn't something I'm going to sit back and do a lot of research on and think about too much. Let's just jump in, get that MVP out the door, and start learning about what people need while they can actually see the product there in front of them and see what we're interested in. And the second reason in our case too is, being a consulting and development firm, there's always a lot of questions around like, okay, well, what can you actually do for me? Like, right, often, right, we say, well, we can do anything. Like, you have a data problem, you want to predict something, sure, we can help you. But often it's sort of abstract in a way that's difficult for clients to understand. And so one of the best ways to generate leads and actually point to say, like, this is something we could do for you, these are the kinds of things that we like to do, these are the things that we can do, is just by actually building something for yourself and then showing the world, this is what we're capable of.
Interesting. Very interesting. And so this idea of having two founders or two co-founders with you that aren't entrepreneurial in that way, what was sort of your thought process behind not only choosing to have co-founders, although that seems to be what you've done all along or mostly, but how did it weigh in the fact that you were the one with the business experience, the only one? And then especially with software now going into the software space.
Yeah. So my two co-founders, importantly, are like brilliant people who actually met during my PhD. So they both have PhDs as well.
All have PhDs.
Yeah. So we're all, the common thing amongst us is we're all data scientists trained with PhDs, cognitive science, and then the ones focuses more on neuroscience. And so our interest was all in like, okay, we want to take what we've learned here and we want to apply it to problems in industry. And so that means like machine learning and statistics and experiments and things like that. And they're also both actually really great programmers as well. So they have that. What they didn't have was the experience in building and deploying web applications. And that's where I said, okay, well, I know how to do that. I've done that a little bit. And so, yeah. And so they don't have the same entrepreneurial experience or the web development experience, but they're brilliant people who are data scientists and programmers. And this has just been a great experience in actually sort of blending our skill sets and them getting this experience themselves.
Right. And like Strong Analytics is like a consultancy company, right? So having three PhDs, obviously, in data science is kind of what you need.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It wasn't like you were going to build Optimail first and you picked three PhDs.
No, not at all.
Okay. Is there like, what's a success sort of metric? Or do you put, I know you say that when you start something, you have sort of that exit in mind already, or you're starting to get it now, but what sort of success metric would you guys put onto Optimail to determine in 6 months or a year, whatever it happens to be, that it's worth continuing down that line?
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's
when you get your data scientists.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the flagship metric, right, for any SaaS company has got to be MRR, got to be your monthly recurring revenue. And so, yeah, I mean, as simple as that, we're not at the point, like it's such a new product, it only released a couple of weeks ago. We're not at the point where we're sort of in our own analytics too much at this point. We're really product focused still. But yeah, it's got to be MRR, and it's got to be too. I mean, at this point, like I said, we're not the analytics. It's really, at this point, it's about the conversations we're having with people. I mean, we're just talking to people who are marketers or developers, who are VCs or anyone, right? Who's like, and just getting their feedback and trying to learn more about how to build a product that fills the right gap for them.
Excellent. And is between Strong Analytics and Optimail, are these going to continue to be your sole sort of focus for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, and I always have a few different things going. So, for example,
I know, that's why I'm wondering.
So I'm working a little bit with my previous partner, with My Site Auditor. We have a new project called Checkly, which is actually doing really well. And it's got a very simple mission, and that is to make it easy to build and share checklists. And there I'm playing not as my standard role of like actually doing all the primary development myself, but more just as a higher level partner and advisor on that project, but really excited about that. And yeah, who knows? Who knows what will come? But at the moment, very busy with just what I have here. So not looking to do too much else in the future.
Kind of consciously have chosen to avoid other ideas when they come into your inbox.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's strange, right? Because I think the move into these actually consulting and development projects for other companies is sort of the reverse of what a lot of people do who are involved in SaaS companies. Typically, you're like, oh, we're a consultancy and we built this product and now we don't want to consult anymore. We just want to focus on our software. I'm at sort of a weird point where I'm going the opposite direction. And that's because I actually really like working on these projects with other companies as well. I mean, it's really fun to dive deep into another company's problems, another industry, and use my experience and use these skills to try to make them run better. That's just as rewarding to me as building something for myself, in fact. So it's a little backwards, but I'm really enjoying that at the moment, too.
Yeah, well, it could be backwards in general, but it's working.
So. Yeah, exactly.
All right, Brock. Well, this has been absolute blast, man. I do want to finish up with one final question for you.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So it's this gap that I think we live in sometimes as entrepreneurs. No matter what we accomplish, we always project our personal successes into the future. So in 3 months, when you hit that metric you want, in 6 months, when you hit the next metric or stand on that stage, whatever it is you want to do, you and I both know that seconds before you hit that, you're going to set 5 bigger, loftier ones into the future, which I agree we need. But from the outside, you look like you have been and had a lot of success already. But to you, I'm sure it could still be in the future. So I would love it if you could stop and turn around, look behind you, the highs, the lows, the wins and the losses. But tell me how you feel about this whole journey from 11 years old until now. And just tell me how you feel about it till today.
How do I feel about it? Great question. I'm proud of it. I'm proud of what I've been able to accomplish thus far. But honestly, there's a huge part where I just feel really lucky too. Like even when you think about that, my second business, the software company where we built subscription websites. I mean, that came because a client came to me at the right time with an idea for their business. At a time when I didn't have exams in school. And I said, yeah, you know what? Actually, I might just build this. And I sat down for like 2 weeks and just started building that. And any shift in that timing, and that might not have happened. And lucky enough that, yeah, when I was 11, someone introduced me. I remember going to like yahoo.com and just being blown away about what you could do. And that might not have happened at that right time too, right? So I feel really lucky about that, about a lot of things in what I've done. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that kind of sums it up. I don't know. Cool. Yeah.
It's cool. I too many people, I think, fail to allow, to admit luck in that. Like just the timing of these exact moments in your life where things happen. You seize the opportunity, but at the same time, it couldn't happen to a lot of things.
Right. You got to be prepared to seize those opportunities for sure. And to go back to what I said at the very beginning, I wouldn't say I'm always prepared because, oh, great, I'm the best person in the world to build that. Or I'm like sales and marketing. Like that was never me. I had to really learn to do that. So I was never even like poised really to grow any of these things. But I just seized the opportunity in the sense that I just learned and worked really hard to try to make it happen. And that's probably what I'm proud of there.
That's awesome. Brought it full circle so well. Outworking everyone else. I had to do it. All right, Brock, we've got to talk like about the business in sort of passing. So could you just briefly tell the listener about Strong Analytics and about Optimail and then where they can track you down online?
Yeah, absolutely. So Strong Analytics, like I said, is a data science consulting and development firm. So we work with companies in lots of different industries, though unavoidably a lot in tech, of course. And what we do is we try to use these new advances in machine learning and AI to make people's products smarter and their companies operate in a more optimal fashion. And so this means lots of different things, and we're kind of still learning about all the creative uses you can take these types of technologies. And then Optimail specifically is our first product. It's a marketing automation product that uses AI to optimize email drip campaigns. So the idea is you build your messages, you write your messages, you tell it what you want people to do. I want this campaign to drive people towards subscribing. And Optimail actually learns when and who to message to make your campaign more effective in driving people to those goals. And so, yeah, if you're interested, you can learn more about Strong at strong.io and Optimail at optimail.io.
Very cool. And you hang out on Twitter sometimes, I think, personally.
I do, yes.
Excellent. And you are at
BROCFERG.
Excellent. I will link to your Twitter and strong.io, optimail.io, also My Site Auditor and Checkly that were also mentioned.
Sounds good. I'll link
to all those in the show notes and your main site, which I believe is just brockferguson.com.
That's it.
I'll link those up for everyone. So when you're done working out, jogging, walking, whatever it is you're doing, those will be there waiting for you. Brock, thanks so much for taking the time to join me, man. Thanks for sharing so openly. I really do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I've been sending email marketing messages for almost 7 years now. But just like in the normal way, send to everyone, send out a broadcast, set up an autoresponder maybe. And I've wanted to try marketing automation for quite a few years, but it seemed daunting. Either there was huge upfront costs or else the technical side, which I am not a technical person, was just too overwhelming. Luckily, I discovered ActiveCampaign. See why thousands are upgrading to a more intelligent marketing solution. Sign up right now for a free 14-day trial. No credit card needed. Go to activecampaign.com/hack. That's activecampaign.com/hack. Maybe now is the point in the show where I should concede to the fact that I'm really lucky to get to talk to brilliant, brilliant people like Brock on a daily basis. And then I get to share it with you. It's amazing for me to get to ask the questions that I know you want and that I want to know the answer to from these smart people like Brock. And it's intriguing, it's exciting, it's engaging to be part of the conversation. But I also love this part of the show, the part where I get to go back and I get to listen. I get to listen like you listen. So I did that. I went back through the conversation with Brock and I listened. And then I went back again and I listened again. That second time back through the conversation, listening to it as you get to, as a third party, there was one thing that Brock had said to me, and somehow I had missed it the first two times, but this time it was so very, very clear. It was that one thing that Brock said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I definitely do. I build businesses that can be acquired, and I do that very consciously. So I think there's two things I'd like to say about that. One is I do it because I'm actually really conservative, which is weird. It's like, I think it's probably atypical for an entrepreneur to be like hyper-conservative, but like I am, and I always plan for the worst. And I always think I need this to have an exit plan for sure in place. And then the second thing is just like, yeah, I do focus on that really hard. And I plan for these acquisitions like years in advance. Really from day one, I look at the company through the eyes of a potential acquirer and I think about how that looks.
And that's the hack. Brock, Brock, Brock. I love this. And I love that you gave us the two sort of sides to it, because just hearing your story, you definitely have a skill for building businesses to be acquired, which is the goal of a lot of people, but I think that a lot of us think about it sort of after the fact. We've built a business and now we try and sell it. And you think about it before the fact in looking at it through the eyes of an acquirer. So the first part was hyper-conservative and always plans for the worst. And you're right, Brock, it's contrary to the way I think a lot of people perceive entrepreneurs, but I don't know if that's necessarily contrary to how we actually are always. Meaning, it sounds good if you're all risk-taking and going crazy and building businesses and jumping out of planes and whatever you want, but it's not necessarily the case. Businesses can be methodically sort of built, and you could also, take the argument that it's safer to actually be in control of your own company now than it is to actually work for somebody else's that can downsize you or get rid of you at any point. So there's that side. And then there's this planning for acquisition. This is something that you need to do, as Brock says, before you're looking to be acquired, almost from day one. And so that's building out contingencies and processes within your business for every step of the way, so that you could be removed. So that Brock goes on to say, if something was to happen to him, there's a way that the company could continue going. That's an acquirable company. So that something, you don't have to get hit by a bus in order for your company to need to go on without you. You can sell the company to somebody else or to another company, and when you're removed, the company continues on. That doesn't help without planning for acquisition first, meaning structures, processes, all these plans in place so that the company runs without you. That's truly entrepreneurship as opposed to being self-employed. You're not building a job. You're building a business that scales and can be leveraged beyond you. I love the 2 points. I love the simplicity of it and sort of the methodical thinking about it from day one. Brock, thank you very, very much. Well, that was a lot of fun. I always love getting to talk to another Canadian entrepreneur from the opposite end of the country, but it's still cool. It's still fun, you know? And it makes maybe my Canadian accent not sound so drastic when there's 2 of us. All right, it's been fun. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Stop by there. I'll link to everything we talked about today on the show notes for Brock's episode. You'll be able to track it down there. Plus, check out the blog and get onto that there email list. There's some good stuff coming down there that I think you'll enjoy. All right, it's been fun. Thank you so much for your time. I absolutely, truly appreciate you stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.